Jenny Green, weekdays from 3.
The sound of the nation.
2FM.
I'm very excited. I'm after getting a bit of Christmas music for this. It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, National Lampoon's Day. These are all great Christmas movies. But today we are talking about peak cheese, the movies that give you a cuddle when you're fragile the day after the Christmas party. And our spirit guide, as always, Santa's chief movie elf, Jen Gannon.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I've never been described as a movie elf before. Well, it's just
listen,
me and Joe Pesci.
It's a special week, elves. Okay? Well, do you know what we're going to do? We're going to start with that then. Elf.
Yes.
The new classic.
I think it is. I think it's like impossible for anyone to be immune to the charms of Elf. I just think that Will Ferrell, there's something about his face that you just can't help but crack up at. And I think if he was played by anybody else, I think it would be kind of creepy because he is like an overgrown child. I think maybe Tom Hanks back in his big days could probably get away with that type of role. But because he's so innocent and also crazed, slightly manic, it's just genius. And I don't think, it's not too schmaltzy. It's not too sickly sweet. There is something that's ridiculous about it. Like the plot is just, like it says the nicest things about people. It's more about being true to yourself. That's the moral of Elf, I think. And I think it's one of those things that families can discover, and I think anybody will enjoy.
You can all ages will kind of enjoy that. Yeah. You know, you're not just watching a kids' movie; your adults will enjoy it as well.
Exactly. It's got James Caan in it. It's such a weird, like he's the best kind of grouchy old man. James Caan, he's just brilliant.
I think it's become like everyone's sort of favourite over the last couple of years.
Yeah,
it's definitely one of those.
Because it's not like absolutely heartbreaking, and it's not way too cheesy. It just has ways that balance perfectly. And I think, you know, just anything that he does in it is absolutely ridiculous. Just seeing him sit on that tiny chair and be giant just in his bright yellow tights just kills me every time. Or just like, you know, running around New York screaming about Santa is just, it kills me. I think he's brilliant.
Oh, just love little buddy. The other one then, The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a Christmas gem. Saying that, I can't remember the last time I saw it, so I might have to put that on the watch list
for
this year.
Think it's one that I hope it's not going to be forgotten. That's the thing, like, because you can replace it with stuff like Elf or, you know, Happy Feet or Frozen or Toy Story.
Happy Feet?
Yeah. Those stinging penguins, they get me every time. But I think, you know, this is the nicest that, you know, Michael Caine has ever been in a film, I think. And it's just, you know, adorable. Robin the Frog, Kermit the Frog's little cousin, who is just the cutest thing, one of the cutest puppets you'll ever see. And he's Tiny Tim. And it just breaks my heart. I don't know what it is. I can't really look at like animated things or puppets without just wanting to cry. They're just so adorable. And I mean, you know, it's Miss Piggy has a meltdown as usual in it. Like it's got all the classic, like the Muppets storyline in it. But it's just really heartwarming. And I think there's something about it where the Muppets can get away with being more schmaltzy because they're not human, and you kind of empathise with them more. I feel more sympathy than if it was a real child being Tiny Tim.
It is true,
it's
isn't
a
it?
Tiny frog puppet being Tiny Tim, and I'm like, oh God, please, I can't, I'm going to cry.
Not able.
Yeah.
The other one that you like, which I have to say is one of my favourites, and it's maybe a bit of a controversial one to pick, is The Family Stone.
Yeah, now I love The Family Stone, and I will go to bat for this every year because they're ostensibly vile. Every single person in this film is they're just so hateable. And it, for me, it's a great alternative to Love Actually, because I do not like that film.
What?
I don't. I don't like anybody in it apart from...
What about when he holds up the cards?
Oh my God, he's stalking her though. She's married.
I know you're not allowed to do that anymore.
No, you're really not. It's a very, you know, if you watch that again, hashtag Me Too, time's up on Love Actually, definitely.
Happy Christmas,
everyone.
The
only person that's good in that is Emma Thompson, truly. And you're dying for her. But The Family Stone, I think, is a good alternative to that because everybody's vile in it, and but it's really funny, and I think it's because everybody's so horrible in it that you don't mind that they're actually going through hell. The only nice person in it is Luke Wilson.
Yeah, he is actually.
He's the kind of stonery son in it. And basically, Sarah Jessica Parker is phenomenal in this. She is so funny because she is just this uptight girlfriend that comes to stay with them. And she's Dermot Mulroney's new girlfriend. And he is like the family stone himself. He is like the gem of his mother's eye, and she can't cope with the fact that he's going to marry someone that is very corporate and not fitting into their kind of bohemian
lifestyle.
She's
not the warmest. And no. Producer Caroline just made a sound in my ear and I was kind of initially going, what is she saying to me? And now I've just remembered it's the...
It's amazing. That tick should have won
and
awards.
It drives you mad as you're listening to it.
And Diane Keaton is suffering from one of those movie illnesses that you don't really understand what it is, but it just gets everybody very misty-eyed and it's not explained. But, you know, she's still glowed in this Vaseline lens every time like the camera comes to her.
It's such a great movie. If no one's watched it, if you're listening in the moment, you haven't seen it, put it on your list. The other one I absolutely love, and I was going to watch it last night and I decided to watch Marriage Story instead. Whoops. Turns out I probably should have gone for this one. Marriage Story, brilliant, by the way, just a little bit sad. The Holiday.
I love The Holiday. And this is very contentious as well because a lot of people don't like it, but Nancy Myers is my gal because she
doesn't like that.
A lot of people think it's really bad. I mean, the only thing I dislike about it is the fact that I think Kate Winslet got fobbed off with Jack Black because they, you know, they're such a mismatch, and Jack Black's character is kind of annoying, to say, to put it mildly. That bit in the video shop where he's singing all the theme tunes to her is very, that would really be grounds for I would probably try and kill him. But I love Cameron Diaz in it because she is crazy.
Yeah,
she is a crazy woman in this film. She is having a breakdown. She's going around swigging loads of wine in the middle of the day and she drives at the same time. No. But she's just lost her mind. She's come from LA. She's after breaking up with someone and then she meets Jude Law, who kind of goes on a bit like a serial killer in it.
But wow, lads, God, you're really taking this extreme.
Like it's quite like what you could see the underbelly of this. It's an odd, odd film. But basically, it's like, you know, Airbnb before Airbnb with romance thrown into it. And I love it. I think there's something about the settings that Nancy Myers creates. Like there's always these gorgeous interiors and you can get swept away in this tiny like English cottage that's so cute. And you have the big clawfoot bats. Like the secondary thing I watch it for is just the interiors of people's houses in it.
It's like a live Pinterest for you.
It really is. It's gorgeous.
The final one we'll mention just for the moment, then we're going to talk about some of the cheesy ones, really cheesy, that are on Netflix, is an all-time classic, Home Alone.
I mean, love Home Alone. And I don't know anybody that doesn't love Home Alone. And if they do, they should be sent away. Because it's amazing. And Macaulay Culkin, I don't know how he didn't even win an Oscar for this or even was nominated for an Oscar, because a child actor doing the range that he has in this film is unbelievable. Because not only is he bratty and annoying, but he's also comedy timing unbelievable for a child. And then also for the serious drama. And then you've got someone like Joe Pesci in it, who I just love, and he's so funny. The Wet Bandits, they're iconic. Like, it's just, I love the way that it's kind of like a semi-action film, but for kids. And all the good kids' films are kind of like action films, like The Goonies, where, you know, it's not just about them being a full-on comedy. It's also about like a kind of adventure as well. And I think all of those scenes where he is in the house and they're trying to get into the house and he's there with like the cardboard cutouts doing the dance party and then, you know, having the video
keep the
on.
Change, you filthy animal.
What a line.
It's just so good. Well, look, stay with us there for a moment, Jen, because there is an awful lot of Christmas muck that's doing the rounds as well. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Jenny Green on 2FM.
Jen Gannon is with me. We're talking about Christmas movies. I'm going to just do a little bit of my jingle bells again for a moment. Now, we talked about some of the really good movies, Jen.
Yes.
But let's talk about some of the made for Netflix Christmas muck.
Yes.
And it is.
It has to be said.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is a time and a place for muck as well.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're in the mood for it. And one of the biggest ones that has taken its place on Netflix over the past couple of years is the Christmas Prince, A Christmas Prince trilogy. They're on the third film now. So the first one was released back in 2017 and it kind of was going along with the Meghan and Harry hype. So the initial one, like basically, they're completely cheesy. Like they're like midway between a Hallmark movie and some kind of American soap opera. So don't expect like fine acting.
So is it meant to be Meghan and Harry? Is that kind of the idea?
They were
roughly
more kind of just cashing in on everybody being interested in Meghan and Harry. So the first one she was a showbiz reporter called Amber and she was dispatched to this vague European country called Aldovia. which I guess is near the Princess Diaries Genovia. They all sound the same. There's this fictional map of Europe that they have in Hollywood, and it's amazing. So she had to track down the bad boy, Prince Richard. They fell in love. And then basically the next film was her getting married, and that was released last year, which neatly tied in with Meghan and Harry getting married as well. And it was called A Christmas Prince, The Royal Wedding, predictably enough. So she had to get used to living her life, like, you know, under the scrutiny of the press and learning how to be a prim and proper monarch. But it wasn't as fun as Julie Andrews in The Princess Diaries. So this year, the third installment has arrived. Excitement, fans. And it is called, well, it's about a baby. So they're having a baby. So yeah, she's pregnant and they're having a regular infant child, not the ovary crushing social media sensation that is Baby Yoda, which is the only baby that truly matters this festive season to me or anybody else. But I know a lot of people who love the Christmas Prince films just because they kind of, you know, are so bad they're good.
I haven't seen it, so I'll reserve judgment until I do. It wouldn't be fair to...
Oh, of course, no.
I won't knock until I try it. Now, Let It Snow, you said this one actually isn't bad.
This is all right. I actually, for what it's worth, this is the one that is the most likely to, you know, for people to actually enjoy, I think. Most of the Netflix offerings for Christmas are a bit like the strawberry cream one, chocolates and the roses, like you just want to avoid them. Mm-hmm. But this is actually good fun, and there is a really good cast. It's a young, like, adult film. It's like written by John Green, who did, you know, The Fault in Our Stars and all those kind of films.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't know that.
And it's a cute kind of teen festive comedy where there's a group of friends that are all in this small town and they all get snowed in on Christmas Eve, and then all of their complicated relationships kind of come to the fore.
That kind of sounds nice,
it's
actually.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Like, it is sweet. And it's partly written by Kay Cannon, who was involved in writing 30 Rock. So there's a lot of, like, rapid fire kind of laughs in it, and it's very warm. And there's a really good LGBTQ subplot in it, which isn't terrifically cliched for once.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And it's great. And it's full of, like, festive spirit, but it's not extremely cheesy. So if you're looking for something that's kind of just silly and fun, this one would be your best bet. And it's got really a good cast in it. Kira Shipka, I can never say her name, from Mad Men. She's one of the girls in it. And yeah, there's a load of people. Shameik Moore from The Get Down, he's in it as well. And like, there's just a good range of, they're very charismatic young cast, and I think it's quite enjoyable.
My favourite, someone just texted, Let It Snow, complete and utter. I'll let you guess the rest. Now, we're just out of time, so we've got time for one more, Jen. So if you're going to give us one more out of your list.
Okay, one more. It'll be The Night Before Christmas, because I really want someone else to watch this and go through what I went through, because I felt like I had...
What did you go through, Jen?
I felt like I'd licked batteries after when I was watching this. It's just the most surreal
film.
Well,
I'm sold. Obviously, don't do that at home, kids. It's very dangerous.
I think you should just watch this film when you have like a belly full of Baileys after Christmas dinner, because it's bizarre. It's Vanessa Hudgens is in it, and she's a science teacher who ends up falling in love with a time-traveling 14th century knight who breaks down her castle walls. So it's The Night Before Christmas
missed.
With a K. And it's bizarre. It's really bizarre. There's so many weird things in it that you can't even... I don't know. He goes around speaking in an accent that's like from Monty Python, and she just... You thinks it's everything's grand. And it feels like she's had a car crash, whereas she hasn't. It's a very, very odd film that I need someone else to watch and make me understand.
I will do that. I will put it on my very busy schedule, and I'll watch The Night Before Christmas. And we will.
Someone needs to help me.
We'll report back next week. Jen Gannon, thank you so much as always.
Here we go.
Jenny Green, weekdays from 3 on 2FM.
The sound of the nation.
Star of RTÉ's Nowhere Fast, Alison Spittle brings her brand new show, Mother of God, to Dublin's Liberty Hall Theatre on Saturday, the 21st of March, 2020. Expect burger bites and Ribena will be served as bread and wine, and the sermon will focus on how Spittle lost her faith, abandoned Catholicism for feminism, and it all started because she never got to be Mary in the school nativity play.
Yeah.
Lots to break down here, Alison.
I know, I hold a grudge, Jenny. Like, I hold a deep grudge.
I've only just remembered as I'm sitting here, and I'm not saying it to gloat because I was about four, but
you played Mary.
Can you say played Mary when you're four and you don't really have any lines?
Well, were you in a blue costume?
I was, and there's a photo at home somewhere, I believe. I think I just got it because of my hair colour. I think that was about it. I think it was
what
the
is
only...
Mary's hair colour? That's what I don't know.
Well, that's actually very true. I always just imagined she was blonde, and I was blonde at the time. But maybe she wasn't. Who knows?
I read an article that said that people that play Mary have better lives than people that don't. So how would you consider yourself compared to us?
I'd say it's non-Mary mediocre on a good day. So talk to me about the show then. What was it like kind of writing it all? Was it very, and I want to use that American word, it very cathartic?
Cathartic. Yeah. The show basically is about, because I have a load of jokes about nativity plays. And like when I chat to my friends about it, the biggest laugh we have is like remembering stuff from back in the day and like how important it seemed at the time. So nativity plays are a big thing. And then like it's all about me kind of moving schools and stuff like that. It's a very kind of nostalgic show, I'd say.
Yeah.
I have a bit about Oxygen Festival and the nostalgia for that.
God, that's a memory that never leaves you.
Oh, it's like Nam for me. I'm scared.
Did anyone ever poo in your tent?
Yeah. Yeah.
As long as it wasn't you.
Like, yeah, exactly. Stop. There was so much that happened at Oxygen. It was like we had like waterfalls of urine. Do you know when you wake up in the morning and you're like, I can do it this day, and then you just see like four streams of urine just going out the side of your tent. You're like, not today.
Do you know
not
what
today.
It is? Because we were all so young then, it's like you just got through it.
You did.
You wouldn't do it now.
Did. Do you know what? I'd survive any national disaster. Like, do you know, like if any natural disaster that put me in, I've been to Oxygen, I can survive it. Like, definitely.
I'm done. I've got the passport stamped.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so like there's a bit about like Oxygen Music Festival and kind of like the Westmead Junior County Council. And also, I miss Mass because I'm not Catholic anymore, but I miss the idea of Mass. So
really?
I do my own Mass.
I have often passed, there's a church that's quite near us. I don't know what religion it is, but it's so lovely looking outside. And it does say all welcome. And I'm like, does that, that may not include us, but it's there is something about going and sitting. I don't know if it's a Christmas thing though. That grabs you more.
I do understand why it's popular because, you know, you kneel down for about 10 minutes and you're just thinking about stuff. It is like meditation. It is like mindfulness. It's mad how like people have turned away from religion now, but we're all looking for kind of something to kind of like hold on to.
Yeah, you need something in your life,
I think. You need, like, the Angelus is class crack. Like,
I love the people in the video for that.
Would you ever do like a remix, like a Jenny Greener orchestra does the Angelus, just have a lad?
Listen, to be the way things are going at the moment, we'll try anything. I will never say never. I'll do it as long as they let me be in one of the videos before the news.
How did they do that? How did they pick that?
I've no idea, but imagine maybe yourself and myself could do it together. We could be standing out on a rock with binoculars in our gym gear.
Absolutely. And then what we do? Let's do the look. 3, 2, 1. Bong.
That works really well on the radio, doesn't it?
It does.
Now, the other thing that's mentioned in the show, I believe, is that, and I don't know how true it is, but I hope it's true because I love it, is when you grew up in England, Ingerland, and you at one point sounded like one of my faves, Danny Dyer.
Did
you really?
Yeah, like my nickname at school was Del Boy. And then it became Protestant, which I didn't like, especially on my communion day. You know, like it's a lot of change. So like, I used to have an English accent and I changed it very, very hard. Like when I was about 7, I'd say.
Did you purposely try and get rid of it?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always loved the accent.
Have you?
I have actually. Now it could be Danny Dyer inspired.
I love Danny Dyer though.
Oh, he's just, I don't know if he puts on the accent a little bit, but regardless, I think it's fab.
Yeah, he's just amazing. No, and I was a fan of EastEnders at the time as well. Like, you know, Barry out of EastEnders falling down the side of the hill.
Oh God.
Wasn't that so sad?
I haven't seen EastEnders in about 15 years and it came on the other night and I looked at it and I thought I could actually catch up exactly with what's happened.
Stop. I'm like that with soaps. I used to watch soaps and now I watch it and I'm like, is he not dead yet? Like, you know.
Or they die and they come back. That's another beautiful thing.
That is another beautiful thing.
Tell me about stand-up and what that feels like when, you know, I know obviously you've been doing it a long time, but do you still get terrified before you go out on stage?
Yeah, it depends. Like, did you see in the news there a fella got a bread roll thrown at him? There was a big thing on Twitter about it. Nish Kumar, who's a great comedian.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, you do get nervous. Like, I wouldn't want to do a gig now where people have bread rolls because I feel it set a precedent. But I do get nervous, of course. I get nervous of hecklers and I get nervous if it's an important gig. So like with Liberty Hall now, I probably will be nervous because it's just a nice gig to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like if people have bought tickets especially to see you, then there's a different type of pressure on you. And like, you know, with a show, you're working on it the whole year, you're writing it and then you're doing the promo and all that type of thing. So you want the show to be good. So the work that you did in the past year means that it was worth it, you know.
And who is your sounding board when you write new material? You obviously, you know, kind of somewhat performer to someone who goes, yeah, that's working. It's not, that's funny. That's not funny.
Yeah, it's proper handy. My boyfriend, he used to do stand-up comedy and he's just like brilliant. He's like, he's the best sounding board ever. Because he loves structure of jokes. I like chatting, you know. I like flapping me gums, you know, and just seeing what comes funny. But he likes to figure out, he's like a little scientist.
Okay.
Well, he's a joke alchemist. That's what he is. And he just figures out like, you know, different bits of wordplay, how, like, some people like the economy of words, which I know this sounds so boring on the radio being very technical about comedy. And I just like putting in as much detail. So when I talk about like a music festival that I went to, before the big funny story, I have all these little bits that I remember and I want to tell people so they can like go on the journey as well. Yeah.
It's kind of like, to me, it's like, I'm going to bring it back to dance music.
Do.
It's like a dance song. I love a good 3 minute intro before it drops.
You need that drop.
You don't want to be straight
in. The drop is a punchline.
Exactly.
Actually, could you imagine a song where, is there any song that the drop comes straight away?
There's a couple and then you don't get into it.
Yeah.
You're like, I was waiting for the build and now it's gone.
That's like a premature...
go on, I'll let you say it.
Premature drop? Is that... I don't want to... You know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying. I think everyone knows what you're saying. Talk to me. We're going to move on. What's happening for Christmas? What are you doing?
Coming back to Ireland. Very excited. So, and the 23rd. Flying back the 23rd and on Christmas Eve we're going to go shopping. I love shopping for Christmas food on Christmas Eve because you get bargains and
lovely.
It's also scary because you don't know whether you're going to get all the ingredients and you'll never have a second chance.
That would terrify me now. I'll be ordering mine like weeks in advance to make sure it's all there.
I'm excited. It's like extreme shopping. You know, and you're just elbowing people in Lidl going, let me get my 6 euro turkey.
Move!
Yeah.
And what about New Year's then? Do you have any resolutions? Is there anything you want to do next year or stop doing or whatever?
Oh, that's such a good one. I've never stuck to a New Year's resolution. What do I do for New Year's? I go to someone's house and then I look on Facebook and I'm like, I should have went out. You know, I always, my New Year's is full of FOMO. And then times where I do go out, I'm like, this is terrible.
You're like, I should have just stayed in.
Yeah, all the time. Like, what's on Jules Holland or whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, it is. It's hard to get a good New Year's plan unless someone has like a good party. You're sort of nearly better off giving it a miss.
What's the best New Year's that you've had?
I think last year, actually, I played in the Button Factory.
Nice.
For New Year's Eve. And it was actually a brilliant night. And I remember beforehand, we were getting ready to go into town. And I said, God, I'm just not in the mood now at all tonight. And my God, we had an amazing night.
Really?
Yeah. And we're doing it again this year. We're in Dublin as well. So that'll be good. So at least I kind of have something already planned that I have to do. And I know I'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Like, you can't really do stand up on a New Year's Eve set. You can't do a joke and then go, all right, now we're just going to go 10, 9,
eight.
You know, 7.
Well, if you're around Dublin, you can come in and we'll let you do a joke just into the countdown.
Just before it.
It's a date. Alison Spittle, Mother of God at Liberty Hall Theatre, Saturday the 21st of March 2020. And tickets price €23. That is a bargain.
It is.
It is. Giving them away on sale now through Ticketmaster.ie and usual outlets nationwide. And Alison, it's lovely to have you back in today.
Thank you so much. No, it's great. It's cheap enough to be a Kris Kringle present. That's what I did it for.
What did you bring?
My ticket to my show.
All right. Alison Spittle, thank you. With the DJ.
Jenny Reed. Come on. 2FM. This is the show. 2FM.
Of course, it is Tuesday, so the man with all the balls, he is in the building and he's got some jingle balls as well today. Mick McCarthy, how are you?
Oh, it's a Christmas intro, Jenny.
Well, listen, it's just, I thought, let's just go with it. I'm feeling very Christmassy. It's pitch dark outside.
It really is.
I feel like we're just getting, like, apparently it gets dark now. It's 7 minutes past 4, to be exact.
Yeah.
So I just feel like we're getting nothing out of the day.
Still dark at 8:10 this morning as well.
I'm coming in the morning when it's dark. I'm leaving when it's dark. That may not be true.
At least we have Christmas.
Exactly. So look, let's start off with a big one. Russia has been banned for 4 years to include 2020 Olympics and 2022 World Cup.
Yeah.
Not a massive shock, really?
No, I suppose not that it's done. I suppose until you start thinking about the actual consequences of like a 4-year ban for an entire country for these big events, so that like Russia just won't be at the 2022 World Cup unless something happens from now. So how does that affect qualification, everything that's on it? It is a kind of a really, really big deal. Russian athletes won't be competing, at least under a Russia flag, at the 2020 Olympics next year in Tokyo or the Paralympics. Now, there is a way in for Russian athletes that can prove themselves as to not being part of the doping scandal to compete under a neutral flag. Now, how do you prove it? It's kind of an ongoing question, but just to kind of give, when they were banned for the Winter Olympics in 2018 last year, 168 Russians still competed under a neutral flag. So,
what is the neutral flag? Is this
I think it's an Olympic flag, is it?
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong about that, actually. I should have checked that, sorry.
Would they like to perform under the Irish flag and get us a couple of medals?
I was going
to
say, maybe they could transfer, you know.
Welcome.
Although I don't know if it's exactly what we want at the moment.
No, maybe not.
So, like, the whole story is just bananas. Like, I mean, there's a part of me that kind of thinks, like, this is brilliant. It's great that they're taking it so seriously and that it is such zero tolerance. Then the other part of me is, like, this isn't just Russia. They have a smoking gun with Russia. And I hope that it's not just a case of, like, let's wash our hands now. We've done something great. We've got the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, because it is happening all over the world. And there is a kind of a systematic doping problem in sport in general, around Olympic sports. Certainly, massively. How this has happened, though, was like it's borderline funny in a way. If it didn't affect so many lives, it'd be funny. In that,
for the innocent people, I suppose, who are athletes in Russia, this must be really hard to take.
Oh, it's devastating, because how do you even go about proving that you're clean and that you're not part of this and you're not all tarred with the same brush? You know, like that's. But you know, you would also question then how many are clean. Not to say that there isn't, not to say there isn't even a majority, but that there was systematic doping going on for a long time. And is it still going on? They were found to be non-compliant, basically. But the way they've got caught here again is just farcical. So in 2015, this all came down, that there was a state-sponsored doping scandal, doping regime almost, and they were, you know, provisionally banned. Then they were let back in 2018 they were being compliant because the Russian anti-doping agency, RUSADA, had to hand over data to WADA. They said they were going to do it. Then they found earlier this year that data was in fact massively doctored. And they're just like, and a lot of it was withheld. And you're thinking, like, how do you hope? You know, there's a lot of these scandals here. Like, how do you hope to get away with this? They're on you. You've got the bans. You've had a chance of a reprieve here. All you have to do is stop doing it.
But there's it hasn't happened. And those are the repercussions.
And they're pretty strong repercussions. One of the things that does jump out to people is that they will be part of the European Championships, the football Euros, this in Euro 2020. And people are saying, why? And it's like, they are, St. Petersburg is one of the host cities, as is Dublin. You know, there's games all around Europe. And so you're thinking, is that something to do with it? But no, apparently it's because the Euros are not considered a major event organization. And that's what they've been banned from, major events. And that is absolutely bizarre, because the European Championships would be, you know, by terms of viewerships, by attendance, by TV rights, I don't know what,
like,
way you designate a major event,
yeah,
but it's bigger than probably anything after the World Cup and the Olympics.
Exactly. Well, anyway, on to something else. I love this. When the world of chess combines with football, tell us about Magnus Carlsen and why we need to know about him.
Okay. So people will play fancy football. A lot of people will play it, you know, Premier League, will play it, you know, get their team together in August and be delighted with themselves and then kind of forget to change your team a few
times. So just explain to me as a layperson, okay. This is when you sit down at the start of the year, do you look at all the players from all the teams? It can include anyone.
Yeah, so it's Premier League matches and you get a certain amount that you have to have a squad of, I think, 15 players. You have to have 2 goalkeepers, 6 defenders, I think maybe 6 midfielders and 5 midfielders, 3 strikers. So,
okay.
And then you have to make a team of 11 out of that and a bench every single week. You can transfer players in and out. You have a certain amount of transfers a week. You've got a budget that you have to operate in. Mm-hmm. You can only have a certain amount of players from the same club. And look, it's a bit of crack and people make their own little leagues and then there's an overall one, right? So people will do it. People will be very, very militant about it and very serious about it. Some people will play it and stop playing in September. I've decided to keep playing this year and I've changed my team every week. I haven't missed it, right? My current position in the world, 3,537,236th. Magnus Carlsen, world chess champion, 6th.
So
God. What I've taken out of this story is that...
You should play more chess.
Or that, you know, I'm not very good at fancy football because it does make me think that if a world... So this guy is a 29-year-old genius, obviously, who is like, he's been dominating chess for about a decade at this mm-hmm. stage. He's also a big football fan and a big Premier League fan. And he's been playing this game and he had a really, really good week this week and lost up to 6th in the entire world. Now, you think about it. Like, I actually can't remember. I think there's like 12 million players or something like that worldwide, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's an amazing thing to be in the top 6, you know, for this. But it got me thinking, like, we all know the type of brain that is needed for a chess player. You know,
yes.
You're thinking 20 moves ahead. You see the whole board. You see things nobody else is seeing. Now, I've had people in my life that have been banging on to me about fancy football and how I have to play a certain player this week and I have to put him in the team this week because in 3 weeks' time he's playing a game against a bad team and you have to make sure he's in there before his price goes up. And I'm just like, I tear my hair out.
Yeah, you're like, I'm just picking them.
You kind of do okay amongst your mates. And then you see this and you're thinking, that's exactly how this guy is doing it. He's been planning to make Mo Salah captain last weekend because they were at home to Bournemouth and he did it. You get double points for your captain, so that's very important. And he made Mo Salah captain this week and it was the best thing he ever did and he's been planning that for months. And it just, do you know what I thought made me think, Jenny? It's just another thing I'm no good at.
It's just... Don't be saying that.
You said this was a positive story. I fundamentally disagree.
How is this guy only 6th? If he's 6th, who the hell is number 1?
I know.
Well, look, stay with us there, Mick. We're going to be talking about being a superstar boxer, still getting given out to by your dad, and also Jose Mourinho. It is all coming up.
Jenny Green on 2FM.
Mick McCarthy is with me from Balls.ie, where we were talking about fantasy football there. We're going to move on to talk about boxing now for a moment, because even if you're a superstar boxer, your dad can still rip you a new one, Mick.
Yeah.
Tell us about Andy Ruiz Jr. and his dad. This is a good story.
Yeah, poor Andy Ruiz Jr. was like, so what happens when you win a fight you're not supposed to win, which happened back in June? He knocked out Anthony Joshua and he suddenly becomes heavyweight champion of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not really prepared for it. And suddenly you're a superstar and basically you go partying for 3 months. You have a very lavish 30th birthday party that, you know, would only certain football administrators in Ireland could... rival, and you have all kinds of things happening. You basically go and have a party for 3 months, then you come back into camp because you have to have a rematch against this guy that you beat in Saudi Arabia. That match happened on Saturday. Andy Ruiz, a big guy anyway, kind of not someone that you'd sort of be used to seeing in a mm-hmm. in a top fight as an athlete, and actually came in for this fight 15 pounds heavier than he did for the last one back in the summer. So 15 pounds, think about it, that's over a stone heavier, came in for the fight. And
that wasn't a problem now, was it, for weighing or anything like that?
No, because it's heavyweight, so there's no
matter.
Any other weight class it would have been, he wouldn't have been able to defend the title. He would have been stripped of it, in fact.
See, you can never be too heavy for heavyweight.
No, yeah,
okay.
So it's once you get
good
to a certain
to know.
Amount, yeah. Unfortunately though, Andy Ruiz was too heavy for heavyweight and basically could not, like, Joshua just kind of like picked him off. He couldn't keep up with him, he was out of shape, and Joshua won his titles back. And Ruiz is no longer the heavyweight champion of the world. Now, what he said afterwards was, you know, like, he's like, Everyone told me I was too heavy, but I didn't listen. I think the partying got me. He says, once I joined the fight, they said that his trainers wanted him to come back into camp in July and he turned up in late September. So that just shows you the difference, right? But yeah. Then he says, like, I don't want to say that the months of partying affected me, but to tell you the truth, it did. So obviously, but the funniest part I found was then his dad gives this interview where he just basically slates him for like 5 minutes, and eventually at one stage goes, he was not listening because of the fame. He was with a Rolls Royce. He was with his friends. He was throwing parties and not listening to the camp. And it's just like, yeah, Andy, you've lost your title. You've lost all the fame and everybody around you and everything like this, you know. But now your dad has also told.
You
lost track of yourself.
We're
son.
Out of time, Mick, but just very quickly, because there is an Irish link. Jose Mourinho made a lovely gesture to Premier League newbie. Irish man are very on Troy Parrott after his first match.
He did, yes. So Troy Parrott, we've been waiting for this for a while. 17 years old. He made his debut for Spurs at the weekend. He came off the bench, made his Premier League debut, and lovely touch at the end. Jose Mourinho takes the ball off Son Heung-min and says, here, I'm just going to give this to this lad, and gives it to Troy Parrott. Troy Parrott, like, it gives him a big hug. It's like, well done, kid. You know, you had your debut. You said afterwards, you know, I think it was a big deal for him, because last week he's playing against kids. Now he's playing the Premier League. He might make an appearance tomorrow night. They're playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League tomorrow night. There's talk that he could make an appearance there. So a lot of things are happening. Jose Mourinho took that job. When the old Spurs manager Pochettino left, we knew he had plans for Parrott. We were all a little bit worried that Jose doesn't bring true to kids, that he might not know who he is, he might not realise how good he is or whatever. That was all put to bed. So that's a really, really big deal. So hopefully we'll see a lot more of Troy Parrott in the next few months.
Absolutely. Mick McCarthy, a pleasure as always. Thank you so much. Thank you. Let you get back out and enjoy the festivities outside.
Here we go.
Jenny Green, weekdays from 3 on 2FM.
The sound of the nation.
Joanne McNally burst onto the comedy scene in 2014. I'm taking your mic down. And in less than a year in the business, she became the co-host on RT2's flagship comedy show, Republic of Telly. Co-wrote and starred in the stage show, separated at birth, and hasn't stopped since. And the next time you will see her on stage will be for her new show, The Prosecco Express. And she is here now for a catch-up about this and life and everything in between. And she has promised to not be too funny today.
I'm too tired.
You're too tired.
I'm too tired to be funny.
How are you keeping anyway? It's been a while.
I'm good. I'm just over the vomiting bug, like pretty much everyone in Ireland, I think. And the UK.
We've managed to avoid it so far, but someone mentioned that it's in the office earlier. I was like, oh God, no, please.
And it's super contagious.
Yours is gone though now.
Mine's gone now. I had my last vom this morning on the plane.
Oh, lovely.
It was a
lovely
panini. So
gorgeous.
I think that's the end of it now. I think I'm over it. I feel 100% now. Like, I'd almost have a drink.
Which
I'm not going to do.
Not on air. You can have one afterwards. Thanks. There's no problem. So talk to you about the show, because we went to see it in September. We went to Smock Alley to see you performing there.
Good.
I was texting you like mad beforehand because I kept saying, oh my God, Joanne, this is great news. You've sold out. You were like, I'm not sold out.
Yeah, I can
try
see
again.
The floor plan. I'm not sold out.
I was like, I can get a ticket for Monday and one ticket for Tuesday. I just can't get two tickets so that we can go together.
There's this weird system in the Fringe where they give the venue a certain number of tickets, and then the Fringe themselves have a certain number of tickets.
Yeah.
And they don't really communicate, so they don't know when one's right. So you told me I'd sold out. And I was like, what?
So congratulations,
Joanne. I know, it's like amazing.
Yeah.
But I hadn't. But I did in the end, thank God. Which has been, that's why I'm kind of not freaked about Vicar Street, but because it's the same show that's going to Vicar Street now for two nights in April. So I'm just hoping. I think The Fringe has its own audience. People go to The Fringe that wouldn't necessarily go to Vicar Street, and people
Absolutely.
Go to Vicar Street that wouldn't necessarily go to The Fringe.
Well, we saw you at Vicar Street as well. So like, we've literally followed you around everywhere. But what I do notice when we go and see you performing anywhere is, when we're queuing up to go in beforehand, what a lot of people may or may not know is that you and I went to the same school. We would have been friendly years ago when we were in school, similar group, year apart. And the entire queue on the way in is Loretto Abbey Dalkey.
I know.
And I'm like, God, I haven't seen these people in years. They look exactly the same.
I know. I noticed that as well.
I know.
And it's so funny, like the girls who are older or younger or whatever. And I think it's kind of because there probably aren't that many Southside
funny
female
people.
Comics.
This is true.
There actually aren't.
I don't think so.
And there's a sense of like community, and there's a, like a local support thing. Plus, I mean, I think I've actually dialed down my accent now because it got trolled out of me. But my accent used to be way more intense.
It was actually.
It was. But you've probably done the same. Although, no, you're Shankill. You mightn't have had. I was like, I sounded like, what's his name? Ross O'Carroll Kelly on acid. Like, I was really, I looked like, it was like I'd swallowed an Ugg boot. It was really intense. But I didn't know, because you don't, you sound how you sound.
Yeah.
But I definitely have dialed it down now massively, I'd say. And not even intentionally, but it's definitely the sting of it's gone.
You like, realise there's probably gone. Someone listening in Cork or Kerry now going, that's dialed down by it.
I know.
Oh my God.
Do you remember Ciara King from in here? She was like, Joanne, you know you're the most hated accent in Ireland.
That's not true. How could that be true?
I was like, shut up, Ciara. You think coleslaw is a superfood? Get away from me.
That's just
common as muck you are.
Now, tell me about the early days of this. So, because when you talk to comedians, a lot of them, there was a couple of them that were electricians. I know you absolutely were not. That seemed to be a thread. So, where
were
did
electricians?
Yeah, they were.
Jason and Peter, they were all in lighting.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed to be a thing. So, what was your kind of, when did you get into it? I know you were in PR beforehand, but after school, before the comedy, did you know you were going to do that or did you want it?
Not at all.
I don't remember people in school going, Joanne McNally is gas.
Well, that's because you weren't listening.
Probably.
The last time, she was, Jenny was too cool. She was too busy smoking out by the bike sheds.
Not anymore.
I'm off them as well. It's so nice.
Good woman.
So I was in college. I was working in public relations.
Mm.
And whatever, grand, living my life. And then kind of fell into comedy because I lost my mind. I was really sick with eating disorder. So I had to leave work and I was back living in my mother's attic and I was in treatment, but I was only a day patient. So I was only in Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And then I was free to just like roam the world at the weekends and in the evenings, but I had nothing to really do. And I knew I couldn't go back to PR because I knew I wanted to do writing and stuff. And I'd written about being sick called Bite Me, that stage show, and then that was picked up by Vicky Nataro, actually gave me a column off the back of that. So then suddenly I was like, oh, maybe I could make money off writing. And then I was in a stage show called Singlehood, and then PJ Gallagher came to see that and he was like, I think you should do stand up. And that's kind of how it started. And then Jennifer Zamparelli left Republic Italia and I somehow wangled that job, only for 2 series though. I think they were like, this was a huge mistake. And then I was back out on my ear. But in fairness, I think I'd done like 9 gigs when I got that job.
Was it that much? Yeah.
9 is really small. It was so early on in my career, but I think they were kind of struggling. But anyway, so then it just kind of started rolling. But it was an absolute accident. Like, I needed a lot of encouragement to stay in it. PJ was very good in that sense. And Una McKevitt also, who directs all my stage shows, she was very good in that sense as well. So in fairness, it was an accident, but I'm so grateful it happened because now I'm delighted, even though sometimes it's a pain in the hell, but I am delighted.
And what about the sort of content for your shows? Like, is it quite personal. Like, I never know. Sometimes I'm listening to a story that you're telling and I'm like, is that such and such or is that? And then I never know if some of them are slightly elaborated.
So the characters, like the girls that I would talk about in the show, Carol and Denise are kind of the main women sniffing around at the moment. They'd be an amalgamation of several of my mates combined into one. I know sometimes I'm like, maybe I'll try and write something like political. And I'm like, I don't care.
No, well,
I just keep coming back to relationships, lads, family, my friends, my mother. Like, I'm never going to write a show about Brexit. Like, that's just not me. I'm not going to do it. Plus, I wouldn't want to go to that show. So why would I write it?
Well, look, speaking of relationships,
we're
going to ask you about that. But now, listen, I know my limitations. Brexit isn't my area either. So, look, stay with us. We've got that and lots more. We're going to talk more about Prosecco Express and what maybe Joanne's plans are for Christmas.
Jenny Green on 2FM.
Joanne McNally is with me. We've been talking about loads of things, talking about the show Prosecco Express. Relationships, I'm not going to go too in deep into that, but I know that that is kind of a part of the routine over the years and finding people and going online. And is there any wedding bells yet? That's all I'm asking. All right.
No, I
do. Do I need to buy a hat?
I actually think the older I get, the less that I want it and the less realistic it becomes. Like, I just don't know if I'm suited to relationships. Okay. Plus, what would I write about? Imagine tomorrow I got pregnant and had a child. What would I do?
I don't know.
There's no crack in that.
See, it's like, you know, the best albums are people who are like upset or tortured or yeah. they're like, you know, unrequited love. But suddenly when someone gets everything, they're real happy. Look at Adele. She doesn't bother making albums anymore. She's like, I'm grand.
Yeah. Or it's like when comedians get really rich and fat. Like if a comedian makes their career off talking about kind of like the hustle and having no money and being really unlucky in life. And then they become like Ellen DeGeneres did that.
Yes.
Absolute. Well, yeah. like I'm not going to say, but like not her best work. No. Because it was obvious she hadn't been in the clubs and stuff. Like sometimes the comedians, they get really big and then they move into telly and they're not clubbing as regularly. Like they're not in the clubs. And
yeah.
doing stand-up is kind of like a muscle. Like you have to, it's like running or anything. The more you do it, the better you get at it. Hopefully that's what your hope is. So if you're not in the clubs, you kind of lose your shine. You're yeah. not as good at it. But didn't she, what was hers called? It was something like Relatable. And she was like, because someone said you couldn't write a stand-up show anymore, Ellen, because you're not relatable, because you're now this multi-mode. And she was like, yes, I can. And she wrote it, and she's not relatable.
No,
but like, then embrace it. Like, Russell Brand does all his material now about being really, really famous.
Yeah.
Like, that's his thing now, which is way more interesting. You're like, at least it's a bit, I hate using the term authentic, but at least it's a bit more authentic.
Then what about you?
I can't wait to be too rich.
Too rich,
so
too
totally
famous.
Unrelatable.
Too. What about when you're out and about? Do people recognise you now if you're in shopping? Like, let's say you're down in Super Value in Dalkey. Are they like?
I love the specific location.
I noticed. Like, so I was going to use Cornell's Court.
Yeah.
For you, I don't know if you shop there. Other brands
are you
available.
Sponsored by Cornell's Court?
No, I'm not. I absolutely. But you know, it's funny when you walk around. Sometimes people go, "How are you?" And you're like, oh yeah,
yeah, I know.
So are you getting that now?
But my memory's so bad because you meet a lot of people. Like it's, you're kind of meeting people all the time because you're not stuck in an office as such. So like when I was working in public relations, you'd meet people, the same people again and again. So you'd remember people's faces, whereas now you're kind of in and out all the time. But like, yeah, it does happen sometimes, but then you can't get caught out. I remember in the bank once, this woman was like, how do I know? Because you don't want to be the idiot being like, I don't know how you know. Like, you know what I mean?
You might know me from my stage
yeah.
show.
Yeah, you start yeah. reading out your own Wikipedia page. You're like, well, I burst onto the comedy scene in 2014. So a woman in the bank was like, I know your face. And I went, at the time, I think I was on Republic Italia. And I went, yeah, yeah, I'm on Republic Italia. She goes, no, I think were you in Loretta Dalkey? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, I think you were the year ahead of me.
Oh, no. You're dying. You're like,
and you're like, ah, who am I?
And then when you're out, even on a night with your friends, do you ever get that sort of pressure to be funny by randomers who come over like, tell us something funny?
No.
And you're like, no, I can't.
The girls are like, oh, you've gone into stand-up, Joanne. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, oh, you're doing that thing. You're doing the stand-up, Joanne. Like, if there's a room. Like, I am a bit of a, like, I was going to say attention seeker.
You're a performer, though.
There's a bit of show pony there. So when you have a couple of drinks, suddenly you're like, boom, boom. And it's not always the most favourable. You just come to kind of dial it down and be like, you're not at work.
Thing is, what I was saying to you off air, what you see is what you get. You on is kind of very similar to you off, which is like, it's great because you know where you stand.
Yeah. And also, do you know what as well? I find that like, because you're kind of like on a lot, that sometimes it's really nice. Like I've started blocking in days next year because things are kind of busy now. So I'm blocking in days where I've no work, no gigs, where I'm just going to like go to Carlingford for 4 days and just speak to no one, get rid of all my apps. I need to do all that stuff because it's exhausting.
What's in Carlingford?
Peace. Okay. A friend of mine has a house there.
Okay.
So I use their house. I go down, there's a house, there's a horse, that's all there is. The house and a
lovely.
Horse.
Lovely.
Yeah, no Wi-Fi, nothing. And just like switch off,
yeah.
properly switch off.
Then what about Christmas? What's that going to be like for you?
So Christmas, I'm going to Thailand on Saturday.
I know. Oh, will you be there for Christmas?
No. Oh my God, my mother would kill
that's
me.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, there was an agreement made in my family. She was like, I don't care what happens in your career. Like, I don't care if you get booked to do the Apollo or a Netflix special. You're coming home, you'll be home at Christmas.
Good
I was like,
woman.
Fair enough, yeah.
So you're going to Thailand this
Thailand
Saturday?
Thailand and back on the 23rd. So I'm going on for a wellness retreat. I'm writing a travel piece for the Sunday Times. But it's not a wellness retreat. It's in, I was like, oh, amazing. Be just like panning out, drinking buckets. It's like moving around and it's all mindfulness. So one day you spend the day colouring in with the Thai family. I don't know. But I'm going to go anyway. Get me out of Ireland. Get me away from the parties, which would be nice.
And then next year, how's next year shaping up for you? Anything
Grant.
Big? Obviously, apart from the shows, which we're going to mention in a moment. But is there anything that's on your kind of to-do list for 2020 that you're like, I'm going to achieve that next year?
God. What am I going to
achieve? Big pressure one, isn't it?
I'd like an ab. I've started doing Pilates. I mean, I know that's not like a professional one.
Normal Pilates now or reformer Pilates?
Reformer.
Yeah, we started that a few weeks ago. Terrifying.
Terrifying, but I'm still learning. So I don't do anything yet. They just kind of, I just fanny around with the broomstick. Like I haven't broken a sweat yet. I don't think I'm doing it right. I went to a yoga class. Because I like, you know, my mind, like everyone's mind, it jumps around a lot, and it'd be nice to be able to focus on things. And I was like, maybe yoga would help. And I went, and I was like, I'm just rolling around on the ground. Like I'm just rolling around on the ground.
Are you not on the machine?
Yoga.
Oh, sorry, yoga.
And
okay.
Then I was like, screw this. So then I started reforming Pilates. But like I say, at the moment it's just me and a broomstick, just lifting it up and putting it down. There's no. I've felt no pain. Yet at all.
Wait.
I think they're being very careful.
I'd say they are. Give it time. Give another couple of sessions. Yeah. You'll be like, ah, I get it now.
Yeah. I want UK telly. I want, I'm going to Melbourne for the month in March, mm-hmm. Which is something I wanted to do as well. And I'm going to travel. Do you know what I'm going to do next year? I'm going to travel. That's my plan. I'm going to travel.
Okay.
Yeah, more. Less work stuff. Because I'm always just banging on about work. I want to travel more.
I think
you
should.
Go out with my friends more and stuff. Yeah. That's what I'm going to do. And maybe get a pension. I have no pension.
I have nothing.
All right, Jenny.
We'll chat later.
I have no pension. I think that's something I should be working towards.
I would
and a dog.
I would if I were you. I'd go with the pension first, maybe worry about the dog afterwards.
All right, Mum.
Just a few ideas.
Yeah,
for
I know.
You.
I need a pension. Oh, my God.
JoanneMcNally.com is where you will find all the details. And the tour is called Prosecco Express.
Can I list out the places I'm going really fast?
No, listen. Do you know what? You can say them however you want. News headlines can wait. Go for it.
Okay. This is way more important. What's going on in the news?
Come on.
The world is boring at the moment. Okay, so I'm in Cork, Galway, Rado, Limerick, Belfast, Vicar Street, April 24th and 25th, Dundalk and Tinnahealy.
And you learnt them off
the
top of your head.
I down here.
All right. I was giving you credit there, all right?
Beside a joke
in the
about
magic
old
radio.
Women getting beards.
Huh? Joanne McNally, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jenny
As
Green.
As always. With the DJ. Jenny Green. Come on. 2FM. This is the show. 2FM. 2020 will be here very soon, and there are already plenty of exciting movies on tap for next year. To help you keep up to date with all the new releases, we're focusing on what to expect for the first quarter of next year with our spirit guide, Tanya Sweeney.
Spirit guide, I like that.
I know, well, listen, we're just after promoting you there. So let's start with The Gentleman. It opens on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to the cinema on New Year's Day, this does sound kind of great now, you know, just to go and veg after all the, you know, revelry of
I never
New
really
Year's
thought
Eve.
About the fact that the cinema would be open on New Year's Day. I've never gone, but actually sounds like a lovely thing
Perfect.
To do if you're not too hanging, obviously. Although
Even if you are hanging.
You're right, I'm in. I'm
Although in. Guy Ritchie and A Hangover might be taking your life into your hands.
That's true. So this is a new Guy Ritchie movie, which is great because he hasn't done anything in so long.
He has not. He has been rather quiet. And I mean, this does sound now a little bit kind of crazy. A very British drug lord tries to sell off his highly profitable empire to a dynasty of Oklahoma billionaires. I mean, it does sound a bit heady. And I mean, Guy Ritchie, I mean, he's got the flair. He's got some great names. He's got Matthew McConaughey and Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey. So she's probably going to widen out her sort of repertoire, shall
this
we say.
This is. Are you a fan of Guy Ritchie movies or not, or in general?
I could take or leave it. You know, I think they're a bit kind of blokey for me, you know, but I do think he's got a lot of flair and a lot of kind of, originality. I mean, I think Lock, Stock was incredible. Snatch was what?
And I loved as well, slightly under the radar, Rock and Roller.
Did you like that?
I liked that. Now, I particularly liked the soundtrack, which probably swayed me. So I think that's where
the soundtracks are always very bad.
Yeah. So that is going to be at New Year's Day. Then there's been a lot of noise about this film, Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit. I think this is going to be a big awards ceremony or award season sweeper. It's Taika Waititi. Now, I don't know if a lot of people, he's a New Zealand director who's done a couple of the Marvel things. I think he does the tentpole stuff, but he also does his own very small kind of lovely handcrafted stuff. Mm. So he did Hunt for the Wilder People, I think, a couple of years ago, which was absolutely brilliant. And this is about a young boy in Hitler's army finding out that his mother is hiding a young Jewish boy in their home. Now, his stuff is very offbeat and very darkly funny. So it's going to be amazing. And he's in it as well, Taika Waititi.
So quite a strong subject theme on this one. But
strong subject, but I think he's going to give it a very kind of irreverent comedic. I mean, if it's anything like his last few films, it will be hilarious, you know. So
hard to imagine, but I'm I'll remain open to that.
It will be brilliant. Anything he does touches turns to gold.
So Jojo Rabbit. Now, the next one we're going to talk about, on paper, this film sounds to me now, and it's just my opinion, which counts for nothing, really boring. Okay, this Stop sounded it. So boring that I was like, oh God, but it's meant to be incredible. So I will reserve judgment. The Lighthouse.
The Lighthouse. I keep hearing a lot of noise about this in terms of like acting nominations and production nominations. It's supposed to look incredible. Now, it's Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. Mm-hmm. And they're playing a story of two lighthouse keepers on a remote and mysterious New England island in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. Stop. The Life Between Oceans was also set kind of in a similar thing. And that was a pretty good film, you know. So
it's meant to be incredible, though. So I will say that.
I know. Why don't you and I go see that together? And if you fall asleep, sure, we won't say it.
I mean, it's a date. It's a date. Now, nothing. We're gonna leave it with this one for the moment. So we're gonna take a break. But nothing says romance to me more than Sonic the Hedgehog released on Valentine's Day.
There'll be lots of people wearing the faces off each other at Sonic the Hedgehog this year.
Listen to the gold rings going ding 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 ding.
I could make a terrible joke. I won't. No,
don't. Not at this hour of the day. So this is a film that's been remade again from being remade because people didn't like Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth, apparently, in the original CGI that they had done. I've no idea. I'd like to see pictures of
these snowflakes and their teeth and their orthodontistry. But yeah, I mean, apparently the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which released a trailer this week, that tried to position Sonic as a mob boss. But it's not what most people were upset over. People were upset over the teeth. They weren't happy with the design and they wanted changes. I guess there are some Sonic the Hedgehog purists out there that...
I'm after Googling a picture of the teeth because I couldn't quite get a visual. I think they're quite cute.
I mean, I think he looks very lovely.
Yes,
like a very nice person.
We'll tweet a picture of that, by the way, if you haven't seen his beautiful teeth, his gnashers. So this is, I can't imagine this being a film. Like, I remember playing this on a Sega little handheld game as a child.
I didn't even know hedgehogs had teeth. Maybe that's how he gets through all those gold rings. But apparently it meant them redoing the whole film and they did it. I mean, just goes to show you there's a lot to be said for, you know, audience feedback.
Apparently a lot of these CGI films, I'm reliably informed by the team earlier this morning, this can take about 3 years and they managed to cram it in and redo it in under a year just to get it out in time. I hope it pays off.
I was going to say they'd better hit box office gold on Valentine's Day. They better get a lot of people now wanting to wear the face off someone in front of someone.
I can't get my head around that. Right, still to come, Jane Austen's Emma is getting remade as if that needed to be done and plenty more as well after Dua Lipa.
Jenny Green on 2FM.
Tanya Sweeney is with me. We are talking about some of the big movie releases of 2020. We've just covered Sonic the Hedgehog. You're going to have to wait till Valentine's Day for that one. But also towards the end of February, you can look forward to an adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma. Do we need another one?
We do.
Do we?
Did
you like the first one, by the way?
I love Emma.
Okay.
I love Emma.
I think I'm just not a fan of period.
Which one are you talking... Are you talking about the Gwyneth Paltrow one?
I am. Yeah. I remember going to see it in school because I think we were doing it in the junior cert or something like yours. They took us to the cinema to watch it and I was like, God, this is so boring.
Did you not think that's a great English accent on your one?
Do you know what it is? I think I'm just, this isn't aimed at me, but I know people who absolutely love Emma.
Yeah. I mean, I'd definitely give it a lash. I mean, it's directed by someone called Autumn de Wilde. I don't know who that is, but I want to be her friend because I want to have a friend called Autumn de Wilde.
I glanced down. I thought Olivia Wilde at a quick glance. So it's not.
Autumn de Wilde, who just, I mean, what a name. Amazing. Yes. And Bill Nighy and Mia Goth are in it. And it was co-written by Eleanor Catton, who is, as far as I know, a New Zealand writer who was one of the youngest Booker winners or something like that. Or Costa winners. She's a very good writer is basically what I'm getting at here. So I think that'll be, it'll be good.
I'd watch it probably for Bill Nighy because I have to say I do love him.
Yeah, I'd watch him now.
Bit of a fan.
Anything. Harvey Norman had.
Another one then, featuring our very own Barry Keoghan. Tell us about Cam with Horses.
Yeah, Cam with Horses sounds incredibly cool. Barry Keoghan, again, he's just phenomenal. And Niamh Algar is another actress who's just absolutely flying it. I think she's got a nomination for the BAFTA Rising Star Award this year.
She was in
The Virtues.
That's
She was in The Bisexual and she's in loads of stuff on Channel 4.
The Virtues I watched her in recently. Yeah. That's when I was like, where do I know her from? Yeah, and she was incredible.
She is amazing. She's definitely going places. So basically, Cam with Horses is set in darkest rural Ireland and ex-boxer Douglas Armstrong has become the feared enforcer for the drug-dealing Devers family while also trying to be a good father. together. I mean,
okay.
Wow.
So and Barry Keoghan is in that as well. So
absolutely phenomenal. Yeah,
it's a win.
It's a total win, I think. So, yep.
Now in March, we can look forward to a sci-fi thriller that sounds quite good. Vivarium, am I getting that right?
You are. And this is an Irish production. So, I mean, and Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots are in it, you know. So it's basically these two find themselves trapped in a mysterious labyrinth-like suburban neighbourhood called Yonder. I was going to put that in a county, but I won't because I don't want a backlash. All attempts to escape end in failure.
Sorry.
It's probably Donegal. No, yes. I'm joking. All attempts to escape end in failure, culminating in the discovery of a baby on the pavement outside the house with the instructions, raise the child and be released. So it's supposed to be a bit like, you know, Black Mirror, which I adore, and Get Out and The Twilight Zone. So, and it has an Irish director and writer, so Gareth Shanley. So, yeah, that is March,
one to check
basically
out.
Wrapped up.
And another one in March, actually, before you do wrap it up, is Military Wives, starring Kristen Scott Thomas.
And Sharon Horgan, which I'm dead excited
about. I actually hadn't noticed that part.
You go.
That is a combination.
I tell you. I'd watch it. Well, I mean, Sharon Horgan is phenomenal to me. So, and this does sound, again, really kind of blackly funny. It's, you know, it's a load of women with their partners serving in Afghanistan and they form a choir and find themselves at the centre of a media sensation and global movement. So
this is like a choir version of Calendar Girls, maybe, is it?
Oh, I like
could
that.
Be. I don't know.
Come on, Jenny.
Listen, I've missed my calling, okay? I have a movie show coming out next week. So that is called Military Wives. Then, again, a bit of controversy surrounding this one. Mulan is coming to cinemas on the 27th of March.
Yeah, which is a live-action remake of the Disney classic. But it got embroiled in a bit of bother because the lead Chinese-born actress, Yifei Liu, became express support for the city's police, who anti-government demonstrators accused of using excessive force to quell unrest, of course. So, yes, that has come up against a little bit of controversy of late, but it's supposed to be a fantastic film nonetheless.
And hopefully it won't stop people maybe from just forgetting about the other side of it and seeing the movie for the movie that it
exactly,
is.
Exactly.
Now, the final one we're going to be covering, the trailer came out this week. It looks absolutely fantastic. The newest installment in the James Bond series, No Time to Die. And there has been controversy with this one as well, obviously, because Danny Boyle was meant to be directing it. Well, he started out, and then various things happened. I don't know the ins and outs of it.
Well, now it's Cary Fukunaga is going to be the director.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I got
okay.
Don't make me say it again.
No, I won't.
And I mean, like, this is probably going to be one of the biggest films of the year when you think about it, you know, because there has been so much already talked, so much already written about this, you know, but between the fact that it's Daniel Craig's sort of last outing as Bond, and, you know, there's going to be a female 007, of course, there's been lots said about that. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge, of course, has been on rewriting duty. So I'd say it's going to be pretty punchy now for Bond, to be honest.
I can't wait to see what Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to bring to James Bond. I mean, it's a match I wouldn't have pictured, but having watched Killing Eve.
Exactly.
I think anything's possible. So it's probably going to be shocking.
Punchy.
I'd say so.
Sexy.
And maybe a bit funny as well, possibly.
It'll be quite funny indeed, yes.
Excellent. So we don't know when exactly that's out, do we? It's going to be a little while away anyway, so we will have to wait sometime next year. But if anyone hasn't seen it, have a little look at the trailer. It's been a couple of years since I've got into the James Bond movies, but I'm definitely going to watch this one because I have a feeling this is going to be the one with the edge.
I think it will. Out in April, by the way.
April 3rd. Excellent. There we go. We'll put it down. That's actually 5 days before my birthday. You can take me as a present.
Am I supposed to be saving up for
that? No, absolutely not.
Get a credit union loan.
Tanya Sweeney, thank you so much as always. And I will see you on New Year's Day in the cinema. Looking forward to it already.
Here we go.
Jenny Green, weekdays from 3 on 2FM.
The sound of the nation.
One lean, mean, comedy killing machine. That is how the Herald described him. And this machine is on tour with his new show, End of Watch. He's hitting pretty much every town near you throughout 2020. So brace yourself, Bridie. Neil Delamere is coming to town. Neil, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. You seem to me like the busiest man on the planet at the moment.
Yeah, I kind of tend to do this. I just tour after Christmas from December the 27th or something till the end of April.
So you don't have to go home at all.
I have to go home. And then I hit peak, you know, Trivial Pursuit argument.
Yes.
You know, when you're sitting there with your auntie, you're going, I now hate you. I mean, I love you, but I've been in the same house with you for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody everybody else suffers from that as well. So they'll go to anything on December 27th. It makes no difference what you do. You could put on any. I could do burlesque. I mean, I wouldn't. I wouldn't put anything through anybody
Listen,
through
that's
that.
That's not a bad shout. Yeah. I'd go to that anyway.
Yeah. You go to it once, wouldn't you?
I'd definitely go to it once anyway.
A misplaced tassel fell off like a Janet Jackson wardrobe moment.
I mightn't sit right in the front though. I might just hang back a little bit.
No. But so I start from there and then go for what seems to be forever. But yeah, till the end of April.
So the show itself, the End of Watch show, the description has me intrigued. Tell me more.
It's essentially about kind of one long story, really. It's about trying to buy my dad an expensive watch. That's what the whole thing is about. Of course, I forgot. And the kind of setup line in it is that I did it because for two reasons. One, I love him to bits. It's not a very Irish thing to say, but I do. I think he's great. But two, like, he's in his 80s now. So like, it's less of a gift and more of a loan in lots of ways. Like, you're going to get that back fairly
soon. So he got the watch,
soon.
I presume.
Oh, I can't tell you that. You have to see.
No, you're ruining it.
Yeah, you have to see. Okay. Does it happen or does it not happen? So that's kind of largely what it's about. And then it takes you the usual tangential kind of journeys back and forth, yeah.
Now, you're in this business a long time and you do a lot of stand-up and you do a lot of TV shows as well. Do you have a preference for either? Which is harder, would you say?
The stuff I do, kind of panel-y shows are great fun because it's just you and your mates messing around. And so that's kind of fun because, you know, somebody else is going to make you laugh because you don't know what they're going to say. So it's a bit of crack. It's the same as you presenting with, say, Nikki, or you presenting with whoever. You know, you're having the crack with each other, you know, and you don't know what they're going to say. So there's that kind of bounce and energy you feed off each other. And then stand-up is the kind of suits the megalomaniac side of you, who you control everything.
Thing about stand-up, though, that I love, it's a bit like live TV. It's instant, because the one thing I always find about TV is, and I'm guessing it's worse with jokes, is that I know even the little bits I've had to do for something and you're reading something and you're saying something, they're like, that was great, now we need you to say it from seven different angles, and you're like, it's lost now
and all the spontaneity is gone. Yeah,
is
absolutely.
Is it the same with a joke? Are they laughing the first time, like, Neil, that's brilliant, can you just do it again four times?
Well, yeah, it's not so much for us, but sometimes the guy who hosts the show and he has to read the autocue and then he reads it and then something went wrong and he has to read it again and then the audience has to pretend, and then we get the audience to act, try and remember how you laughed the first time and then try and laugh again the second time, so you can get a bit of crack with it. But like, yeah, nothing matches is the immediacy, the kind of instant reaction of stand-up as well. And also, like, so if you're doing a sketch show and you come up with an idea today, say you have a sketch show tonight and you come up with an idea like, oh, it'd be brilliant if we need a red van for that. You know, there's a million things. Can we get, is a small blue van okay? Is a yellow van okay? You know, there's always kind of last minute things in your way if it's to be shot for TV, obviously, because it's just more complicated. Whereas if you're doing stand up, if you think of a joke with a red van, then you just do the joke. So the only thing that limits it is your own imagination.
That's it.
I suppose it's a bit easier in that regard.
And then the blame game, I mean, that's been going for, you're on it since 2015, is that what you were saying?
Since we were occupied as an entire island by the British.
Yes.
No, it's been going since. No, 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So for years we were doing the panel in the Republic, me and Colin. My comedy wife, Colin Murphy, and then we were doing the Blame Game in Northern Ireland, and then so the Blame Game continued, and that is going for since 2005. Yeah, it'll be 15 years next year. Yeah, so it's kind of mad. And Joanne, I know Joanne was in with you recently.
She was.
She did it last week.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of people's first kind of TV. So John Bishop's first TV, or Kevin Bridges, he came back for the 10th anniversary on TV a couple of years ago, and so it's been going that long.
And it's a great slot. You're in just before Graham Norton, so you've got like a massive captive audience.
Yes, yeah,
which
yeah.
is brilliant.
And sometimes people switch on for Graham Norton and catch the last minute of our show.
They're like, is this not over yet?
Yeah, yeah. What is what is this? This is a very disappointing panel that Graham Norton had Cate Blanchett on last week, who was this bearded man from the Midlands.
Yes, but did Graham Norton get mentioned in the House of Commons?
No, he did not.
So tell, for anyone who doesn't know this story.
I turned on my phone after going to the Joker recently, and I got loads of tweets going, you're mentioned in the House Comments. I was like, no. I thought, because our show is called The Blame Game, somebody went, oh, let's not play The Blame Game or something like that. And then I looked at the clip and the Northern Ireland secretary, shadow secretary, the Labour guy, went, I don't think we should play The Blame Game. To me, The Blame Game is this topical television show with Neil Delamere, Colin Murphy, Jake O'Kane.
Which he said was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And then he went, I think the House will agree. And then nobody agreed. It was complete silence from everybody in the back benches. But it's a bit weird because normally the only people, if you're Irish and you're mentioned in the House of Commons, you've done something wrong, you're on a list of proscribed organisations somewhere. So that was a bit mad. That means we're in the record forever and ever and ever, which is kind
this is brilliant
a bit
news.
Weird, yeah.
And then you've been contributing as well to BBC Radio 4 with the Now show on The Unbelievable Truth with David Mitchell. And a lot of really good comedy has come through BBC Four, hasn't it, over the years, which we might not be aware of here.
Yeah, a bit more so now because people are kind of podcasting the comedy of the week and that sort of stuff. But yeah, it was a stamping ground, I suppose, and a proving ground for lots of things like kind of the Little Britons of the world and all the rest. Like, it has a very long pedigree of comedy, and the comedy would start there and then it would get developed there for a radio audience and then it would go to TV. So yeah, they've been like, some of those shows have been like Desert Island Discs has been running for 70 years, and the News Quiz, I've done 5 or 6 episodes of the News Quiz in the last year, and that's, I think that's running 40 years. Sandy Toksvig used to present it. So it's a huge market, so I suppose they have more avenues for comedy rather than here, because obviously we're a little bit more constrained by what we do. So yeah, that's been fun, and I've always admired David Mitchell intensely, and I've always loved Would I Lie to You. So I did The Unbelievable Truth with them, a couple of episodes. I think they're in January and February. Mm-hmm. And you know the way when you meet someone, you go, oh, I hope he's going to be nice. I really hope he's going to be nice. And he was lovely. He was really charming and exactly what you'd imagine him to be.
Because sometimes there's one or two people that you always have in your mind that you can't wait to meet. And sometimes you just get a bit disappointed.
Massively
You've
disappointed.
Built them up far too much that nobody can live up to that.
Yeah, not naming any names. Ronan Collins.
No. I hope he's left the building at this stage. No,
I just tried to pick the nicest person I could think of for comic effect.
Now, this tour is pretty intense, and I was hearing recently that Tommy Tiernan had spoken about sort of his ritual, some of the things that he sings maybe in the car when he's going from gig to gig, because you're traveling like all over the country.
Yeah.
Do you have like something that you do that you can tell us about that's clean that when you get in the car?
What time is this? 5:20. No, I have absolutely no traditions. I always drive with my clothes on.
Would you listen to like a podcast?
I do listen to
the radio or
listen to podcasts. I listen to Football Weekly and The Guardian. I love Football Weekly, and I listen to history podcast, and I listen to, I obviously listen to Jenny Green Show between three and
obviously.
On 2FM all the time.
I wasn't
Your
trying
producer
to walk
is clapping
that.
Through the window
yes,
there.
Yes, we need to clip that.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of, you know, because when you come off stage, it sort of takes a while to come down.
Yeah.
And you get suddenly straight back into a car.
Garrod Farrelly is usually the support, so he tends to throw a towel over me, like James Brown. And I go, I can't go on. I go down onto two knees, like a cape. And then the crowd go on. And then I go back on. No, I don't. Although I would love to do that. If you're listening, there is a new rider in your contract.
I tell you,
can
that's
I just
the
say,
one.
I have to drive generally, because he is the opening act on most of the tour, and he drives like a geriatric.
He also drives an electric scooter a lot of the time as well, so that's not going to help you going around the country.
Immensely. I swear to God, there's a part of his brain that the further the journey is, the slower he drives. You've been coming back from Clonakilty and he's going 40 miles an hour on a motorway and you want to murder the man. So
poor Garrod.
We get there safely because he's a good driver.
Now, I know you're not getting a huge amount of downtime. Is there any plans for Christmas? What's Christmas like in your house? Do you have any traditions or anything like that?
I had a full trimmings. My brother's going to do the full trimmings this year. Yeah, he's a really good cook, so he does everything. And as I said, my dad's in his 80s now, so we let him kind of, and mother as well, so we kind of let them kind of put their feet up and we kind of do stuff. So.
And we'll see.
But when I was growing up, we had mad stuff done. Like, I remember my dad cutting a tree down in the back garden as a Christmas tree.
As in like Chevy Chase
as our
type.
Yeah. And then there was one year he came home and he went, I've won a turkey. And we were like, woohoo, you've won a turkey. And then someone delivered a turkey and we heard, and it was like, okay, we thought it was going to be prepped and was not prepped. So turkey.
Alive?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So I always remember my dad, I hope he won't mind me saying, years ago when we were kids coming home from his Christmas party that night, let's say a couple of sherries on.
Oh, okay.
And said to my mum, don't worry about Christmas, I won a ham last night, everything's sorted. She went, great, I won't order one. And then found out the next day that he'd actually won an umbrella.
So, I mean, they're very similar.
They are similar.
Do you remember that Rihanna song, Ham, 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 Ham? Ham.
Yeah. When the sun shines, we shine together.
Yeah, yeah.
So the End of Watch Tour, December 27th, Mo Theatre, Nace, sold out in Capitals.
Yeah, most of them a good few of them are sold out now, yeah, so we're kind of adding extra dates as well, yeah.
So the 28th then, you're going to be at Source Arts Centre in Thurles, 29th Hotel Kilmore in Cavan, 30th Westport Town Hall Theatre, and the 3rd to the 5th of January, Marketplace Theatre in Armagh, 3 nights sold out as well.
Going, yeah. So Vicar Street, February 8th and 9th are the ones in Dublin, so yeah.
And you can get a ticket for that
Cock
at the moment.
And everywhere, yeah. Brilliant. For the next week.
Neil Delamere, it is lovely to have you in.
Thanks,
and
Jenny.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Thank you. With the DJ.
Woo! Jenny Green. Come on. 2FM.
This is the show. Down. 2FM.
Back in September, Bombay Bicycle Club announced their highly anticipated return with a great self-referential single, Eat, Sleep, Wake, Nothing on You. And we are now waiting with bated breath for the new album, which is coming in January 2020. In the meantime, they're gigging around the UK and Ireland, and they're in studio with me now. So Jack and Jamie, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having us.
I was just saying to you off air, I think the last time we met was probably about 8 or 9 years ago at some festival. I don't know which one it was here. All I know is it was probably raining and it was probably a mud bath.
It is Ireland.
It is, exactly. So, look, we're going to start with it. The new single, Everything Else Has Gone Wrong, is also the title of the new album. And the song sort of starts with the lyrics, I guess I found my peace again, and yes, I found my second wind. So, I mean, discuss. Where did this feeling and this, you know, emotions and lyrics, where do they all come from?
This was one of the last songs we wrote. Mm-hmm. And I think that whole experience, it took us about a year to write the record, and it was very much like an emotional roller coaster, going like from thinking, oh, we still got it, we can still write songs, to sometimes doubting yourself. And I think once we'd written this and looked back at the whole record, we thought we've made something we're really proud of, and we feel like we found our second wind.
Was there ever any talk of not coming back? I mean, the last album came out in 2014.
Yeah.
And even that So Long, See You Tomorrow, was the plan then that was going to be it, or did that decision kind of come after the album?
I think when we were making the album and touring the album, it was kind of clear that we would take, a break. And it wasn't clear how long at that point. But then I think once we actually stopped doing it, it seemed like it was going to be, you know, we had no plans of like making music again, basically. I think it wasn't inevitable that we would do this again, by any means. And I think part of the reason we said we were going on a hiatus rather than breaking up is, in case this did happen, we didn't want to kind of be dishonest. And, you know, some bands in recent memory have made like quite big deals.
The farewell tour.
Yeah.
And then back.
Yeah. And, you know, you know, they'll charge people loads of money to come to like this like really emotionally wrought farewell gig. And then they're back within 3 or 4 years. So when we stopped, we kind of did it on the quiet, really. We didn't say that much beyond just we don't have plans to make music for the immediate future. So it seemed pretty definite at the time, even if it doesn't kind of appear that way now.
Well, everybody is so delighted that you're back, and it also feels at the moment like kind of, and I hope people don't mind me saying this, but good music is making a comeback. It is out there, and it is great to see the likes of you guys coming back. Obviously, I know, Jack, you had done a solo album and everything. You do your own when you're off. And Jamie, then you were saying you just stayed out of music completely, which is kind of, you know, I suppose, was it a brave thing to do, or was it just like, I just want to totally get away from this for a while?
I mean, I guess like normally I went to university, and I guess normally when you're like in your early 20s, that's the safe option. And like doing music is the unsafe one, but it was probably the other way around for me. Like everyone in my family are musicians, like folk musicians. And so in my family, like not being a musician was like an act of rebellion in some ways, whereas normally obviously it's the other way around. So like if I was to become a banker, that would be like, whoa. What are you doing? Or a lawyer or something.
Was there ever anything else? What about you, Jack? Was there ever anything that you really wanted to do as a career if you hadn't have been a musician?
I've also started a part-time university degree in astronomy. So I've always wanted to be an astronomer.
So that would have been the dream job.
100%. We're a nerdy band.
No, you're not. I loved something that you had said before, Jack. For my whole life, I haven't been very good at expressing myself through words. That's kind of that's some statement for someone who's then writing lyrics as well.
I know, but that's the irony of it. So I do tend to just write a lot of instrumental music, and then I forget that I'm in a band and people need to hear me sing. So just before we start recording, I scribble down some words.
Are you one of those people that respond with a text message and you get a long message and you just get, okay?
Just K, actually. I forget that. Oh, yeah. K.
So since you have been back, you know, how has it felt for you being out there? How's the were you expecting the kind of reaction that you've got so far? Because there's no doubt Bombay Bicycle Club fans have lost their minds.
We were really pleasantly surprised. I think everyone has a bit of self-doubt, even if like people from the outside think you must be super confident because you're quite a successful band. You always are kind of a bit neurotic about that kind of stuff. But as soon as we made the post saying we're releasing new music, the response was incredible. And again, at the shows, like people are singing louder than they ever were before. So I think taking a break has obviously made people miss us a little bit.
So when you're doing the shows then, is it the new material and a mixture of the old? Is it a bit of everything?
Well, I guess the kind of proper touring hasn't started yet, but the main tour we did so far this year was actually for the 10th anniversary of our first album.
Mm-hmm.
I Had the Blues But I Shook Them Loose, which came out just over 10 years ago. But yeah, we were throwing some new songs in there, and Eat, Sleep, Wait, which was the first single, was probably kind of one of the best received songs of the set already, which is exciting, because it would have been a shame to come back and do this and just like, treat it as a kind of like exercise in nostalgia.
Yeah.
And it kind of be like a nice trip down memory lane for people, but not be kind of exciting creatively and not have fans kind of excited about there being new music. We kind of said when we were making the album that we wouldn't, we'd stop if it seemed like we weren't going to make an album that could kind of live with the other ones. But I definitely think it can, and I think it's kind of as good, if not better.
Well, I think the videos as well, like the video of, where you're lying on the ground, you're getting, it's brutal. Were you bruised afterwards?
I was quite heavily bruised, actually. We've got some behind the scenes photos, which we might release one day. And I had to play a show a week later, and actually my ribs were quite like damaged, and it was quite hard to sing for an hour and a half, but I think it was worth it because I really loved the video.
People need to see this for anyone who hasn't, because I watched it very closely and I thought it looks like you're properly getting stomped on. It doesn't look like it's just acting.
I mean, the annoying thing was the rehearsals were way more brutal than the final take because it's all one shot.
Have you got any padding or anything on?
I've got a little bit, but there was a little bit exposed, and that's where they kind of aimed for, I think, because they knew where the pads were.
They're like, I've got to get them. So anyway, you are hitting the road in January and February. The new album as well is going to be out in January too. Dates across the UK. You're coming back to Ireland as well. And you will be here on the 10th and the 11th at Vicar Street in Dublin.
Yes.
We believe the 10th's completely gone, but we think there is a handful
few more
of tickets. That are left for the second night in the 11th, and we will definitely be there. Looking forward to it already. And we're going to play Everything Else Has Gone Wrong. How would you describe this song? Because it's deep, but in a matter of a few sentences.
It's kind of celebrating the fact that for a lot of people out there, in times of crisis, music is your medicine.
Well, here it is. I will let people have a listen. Jack and Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today. Bombay Bicycle Club. This is the new single and the title track from the album, Everything Else Has Gone Wrong.
Here we go.
Jenny Green, weekdays from 3 on 2FM.
The sound of the nation.
The festive period. It can be stressful for many different reasons, but it's also a time of coming together and sharing experiences with those you love. It may be peak cuffing season, but whether you're in a long-term relationship or just in the early stages, it's also a great time to get out and enjoy all that Christmas has to offer. Luckily for us, blogger Philomena Kagawako has compiled some of the best affordable date nights in a list she calls The 12 Dates of Crimbo, and is going to share some of those with us this evening. Philomena, you're very welcome. How are
Thanks
you?
Thanks so much. I'm good. How are you?
Now, I'm good. We've so many to get through, so
yes.
We're going to do as many as we can. I know you've done some of them yourself. You've got some favourites, but we're going to start with the Coca-Cola truck tour. I didn't even know you could do this.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, it launched there on the 30th of November, and they had 9 stops around Ireland, and it's finishing this weekend. So yeah, it's amazing. It literally feels like you're in the actual Coca-Cola ad, because like the big massive red truck is there and you can take loads of Instagram shots and loads of little festive bites. So yeah, you're not allowed to get on the truck, mind you.
But
you can take pictures aside it.
Oh no! Now I'm disappointed. So, but you do also get, it says a free can of Coke,
yeah.
And there's Christmas dolls with some vendors there, bespoke gifts, personalised glass
exactly,
bottles. Oh, I'd like
yeah.
one of those.
Oh yeah, I love one of those. So yeah, it's great.
So that is running from Friday the 13th, which is tomorrow. So it's at different locations around the place. And yeah. Dublin, Cork, Waterford, so people can check those out. Now, another one. I have not been to this since I was a child. A Night at the Panto.
Yes. I have my tickets booked for next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So I am dying for it. So we're going to Aladdin in the Gaiety Panto. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
That to me is that I remember I must have been about 7 or 8 and I think I went to see Dick Whittington was my memory. That was kind of a thing that you did at Christmas. So anyway, it is for adults too then, as you
say. It is, yeah. There's a Disney princess in everyone.
Oh, well, I'm not going to argue with that one. And there is loads of other pantos, by the way, that are on around the country just for people. Waterford Panto Society, they have Robin Hood and Babes in the Wood at the Theatre Royal in Waterford. Tickets are on the theatreroyal.ie. And Limerick Panto have Beauty and the Beast at the Lime Tree Theatre from December 27th. Now, this one you're very excited about, Paint Club. Tell me more.
Oh my God, I'm actually looking to get tickets for next month. So the whole thing about
this is hint, hint.
If you're listening, you better be listening.
You have the national airwaves, Philomena, use them.
So basically the whole idea with this is you book your tickets online and you go in and you're in with a crowd and you give you like a blank canvas. And there's like a professional artist at hand and they give you like step-by-step guide on how you can make your own masterpiece. So you have like a glass of Prosecco or like a bottle of beer or whatever tickles your fancy. Mm-hmm. And you just unleash your inner Van Gogh and put a glass of Prosecco.
Does the alcohol help the painting? I wonder. That's what
I'd say. So, yeah.
Listen, you had us a Prosecco. I was like, I'm all in. The other one then, this sounds really nice. Skate and Date is back at Dundrum on Ice.
I love this. I absolutely love ice. I'm not great, mind you. I'm literally one of those people who needs like a skating aid with the little penguins that they have in Dundrum on Ice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. And I see some other people do. I've tried it once many years ago and I just don't have the coordination or the balance for it. But some people are flying around. Yeah. It's like Torval and Dean watching them. So this is going to be happening. Then there's also there's a tie-in as well with the something with Jamie's Italian Restaurant.
Yeah, so basically the Skate and Date deal ties in with that. So what happens is you can get a free glass of Prosecco with a 2-course meal just at Jamie's Italian's Restaurant if you show them your ticket for Dundrum on Ice. So it's a cool little deal.
Very nice. Yeah. A little bit of Prosecco would help. That's kind of, maybe you should have that before the ice skating. I actually found, and I was saying this earlier, I went skiing, I remember, a number of years ago, and I always felt now just the one. But if you had a little drink before you got up on the slopes, I'm not saying people should, but it does actually,
I don't know.
You're not as stiff and anxious, I find, but just the one.
Yeah.
Other ice skating events that are happening around the country, Cork on Ice is at Mahon Shopping Centre, and there's also an ice rink in Mullingar running until the 12th of January. You can see all those details on iceskating.ie. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move on. Comedy Date Night.
Yes. Can't go wrong with a few giggles now, can you? Like, I love Comedy Night. Usually with events like this, the tickets are cheap enough and you can get them at the door. Mm-hmm. We did the International Bar there 2 weeks ago and it was amazing. Although we did get singled out in the crowd, so that was a bit awkward. But other than that...
Did you make that mistake of sitting near the front?
We didn't, actually. We purposely sat on the side and she was just like, she pointed, he's Austrian, so very clearly, you know, tall and looks very Nordic. And she was like, are you used to a couple, are you? And we're like, yeah, we are. She's like, oh, but it would be very weird if you were brother and sister, wouldn't it? We were like, well,
okay. Thank you very much for that. So that is going to be happening. That's on at the International Bar. Obviously, that happens all the time. And then there's also Ireland's smallest comedy club takes place in the Dewdrop Inn in Galway City every Thursday night. You can check out their Facebook page for more details. The next one has myself and I'd say producer Caroline written all over it. Wine and Cheese Festival. This just sounds like heaven to me.
Yes, it does. It's finishing this weekend though, so it's in Swords. I'll see if I can pop in because I'm in Drogheda, so I might just drive up or something. But yeah, I love a good wine and cheese combo. So good.
So that is happening at Jam Park, Airside Retail Park in Swords. And it says the Brie praising event will have plenty of music and entertainment for all attendees. A very fitting addition to the 12 Dates of Crimbo list. This is great. And it finishes, as you said, on Saturday. And tickets are on eventbrite.ie. Now, we're moving through the country. We're going to Galway now and the Continental Christmas Market.
I haven't been to Galway in so long. My sister used to live in Salt Hill, so we used to go like twice a year. Mm. Gorgeous. Like, I'm obsessed with it. So yeah, the Christmas Market in Galway is definitely worth visiting.
Excellent. The other one then is Music Lovers Date Night. This is music industry in Ireland soaring with artists all around. So there's obviously a load of different venues that you can go to.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you just go on like music venue websites and just search to see if they have any upcoming gigs, and usually with like local artists, you can get affordable enough tickets and stuff. So yeah.
And then this one I had never heard of before: a date night at the Address at Dublin. Yes. One. I haven't heard of the Address.
Oh my god!
I don't know how. I must have been living under a rock for the last while.
It's right across from Conley Station, so it's like a boutique hotel.
Gorgeous.
So it actually is hidden away, but it's stunning. Like if you go in, like it's actually gorgeous, and they usually have little deals on with McGettigan's Cook House. Mm-hmm. So you just go in, you can have your meal, and they have little deals on and promotions that you can have like a lovely little meal and free champagne and like a lovely little night stay and stuff. So it's really, really nice. Yeah.
And so that is at the Address at Dublin1.ie. Yeah. You can find out more. And I also see that the Marker Hotel, they are also running something, so you can find out the details on their website. Now, this one I know is your own favourite, Ultimate Date Night, yes. Stella.
Yes.
Tell me more.
I'm just obsessed. Like, the second you walk in, it feels like you're on, like, the set of The Great Gatsby or something. Like, it brings you back 100 years, like, literally. So, yeah, you go in and there's a lovely little refreshments bar and you can go in and get, like, your popcorn from a lovely, like, a vintage popcorn machine maker. And, like, there's just loads of little bits and you can get your drinks at the bar and then order food as well. And then you can toddle off to your seat and the waiters will come over and bring your food. So, it's heaven. Everyone has to try these ones.
Normally you're going into the cinema and you're just laden with stuff under your arms trying to get your seat. So now you can just go in and be served.
Yeah.
So you can check out stellacinemas.ie for the full lineup and ticket details. But we would advise to book early to avoid disappointment. Now, Christmas at the Castle. What is this? Tell me more.
It launched today. So okay. Dublin Castle, yeah, I'm going to pop in later on today. So Dublin Castle have literally turned the courtyard area into like a winter wonderland. So they have like 30 different stalls where you can get loads of food and little like handmade gift ideas and stuff like that. So yeah, that's going to go on until 22nd, I think it is. Yeah. So yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So that is at, you can find out the details on their Twitter at Dublin Castle OPW. And then the final one, we're finishing off New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. My favourite time of year. I actually prefer it to Christmas, dare I say.
I do.
Okay. I just love the countdown and like the whole idea of like new beginnings and like putting the past behind you and focusing on the future. So like, yeah, love New Year's Eve.
So that is New Year's Eve Dublin.
Festival,
it's going to be the festival happening in the heart of Dublin. Family and friends, iconic landmark, the Custom House.
Yes.
And there is the concert that's happening there. Walking on Cars, special guests Ash, Amy and Lisa McHugh. And there's also events that are running kind of during the day. So you can pop in with your kids.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, happy Christmas to you, Philomena. Thank you for coming in to us today.
Of course,
and
thanks so much.
Seeing as you talked about New Year's and you love kind of new things and starting afresh, is there any resolutions in the pipeline for you?
I don't believe in resolutions, to be honest. I just believe in focusing on my goals that I have. I usually have like 3-4 year plans, so I'm working on that. And, yeah.
Well, we will watch this space. Philomena Kagawako, thank you for coming into us today.
Jenny Green, weekdays from 3.
The sound of the nation.
2FM.